All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today's November 25th, 2025. And our top story this morning, NVIDIA down and Google up. That seems to be the big trade going on in Wall Street at the moment. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. So what is going on here? Well, last week we had Google's new large language model, Gemini 3, was released. And the reviews were generally positive. They were particularly positive in the context of some recent reviews for, say, OpenAI's GPT-5, which was largely viewed as a joke and overhyped garbage. Gemini 3, I haven't used it, but from what I've read, is pretty good. In particular, pretty good for things like code, writing code. And the big thing about Gemini 3, besides the fact that the market generally liked it, was that Gemini 3 used predominantly Google parent Alphabet's own custom chips. They use Tensor Processing Units, or TPUs. What does that mean? I don't know. All I know is most of the other models are all trained on NVIDIA's GPUs, or graphics processing units. Now, we've seen this threat for a couple of years. It's been lingering out there, this talk about how NVIDIA has a monopoly on the market for advanced GPUs, but how like Google and Amazon and Meta, all these companies were working on their own custom chips. But it was always this distant threat over the horizon. The NVIDIA bulls were always very dismissive about competition. NVIDIA enjoys big fat margins. That may be about to change, because contrast the reception that Gemini 3 has received with GPT-5, and then recall that GPT-5 was trained on NVIDIA's GPUs. And within a few days of the release of Gemini 3, now we've got the story yesterday that Meta is in talks with Alphabet to buy these TPUs instead of buying NVIDIA's GPUs. Uh-oh. Now we've got to worry about competition. Now we've got to worry about this space potentially becoming commoditized. Now we've got to worry about shrinking margins. And worst yet, if I'm right, and this bubble is about to burst, we have to worry about NVIDIA's shrinking share of a rapidly shrinking margin. No bueno for the NVIDIA bros. That stock is down this morning, and Google is up on that news. That is driving the market at the moment. Now, we've got this other story going on in parallel. There's been a lot of bearish NVIDIA talk since their earnings. I've contributed to that quite a bit. Strangely, NVIDIA seems to be worried about this news because they did what they always do. They called up their sell-side analysts and said, yo, circle the wagons, guys. We got problems. It's time for you to earn that next interview with Jensen Huang. And they released a memo to sell-side analysts basically saying, we're not Enron. Okay, that's kind of hilarious. Remember, NVIDIA replaced Enron in the S&P 500. That's fun. But why do you have to tell the market you're not Enron? It's like a charge denied is a charge confirmed. Is that kind of what we have going on here? And of course, look, these sell-side analysts, they're so predictable. They are corporate puppets and quacks, every last one of them. Of course, they took what NVIDIA told them and they repeated it as gospel. We wouldn't want to do any actual journalism or any actual questioning. Just take what a big $5 trillion corporation tells us and repeat it as if it's the truth. Why not? But look, here's the thing. NVIDIA is like, we're not Enron. Enron used special purpose vehicles or special purpose entities. They used it to inflate sales. They used it to hide debt. They used it for all this off balance sheet activity. And more importantly, they hid that from the investing public. And basically what NVIDIA is saying is, we're not doing what Enron did in hiding it. We're doing exactly what Enron did. And we're doing it out in the open, right in front of your freaking face. And most of the people buying our stock are too stupid to realize it's the same freaking thing. And therefore, we're not Enron. Okay. I mean, tell me CoreWeave is not just a special purpose entity when it's funded by NVIDIA, when they buy NVIDIA's products with NVIDIA's money, NVIDIA backstops their sales, NVIDIA guarantees their debt. Really? Tell me. And I got to send a shout out to Gil Loria, who is an analyst at D.A. Davidson, who came on my channel a couple of months ago, and he said NVIDIA is on the surface blatantly obvious, a off-balance sheet arrangement, a special purpose entity for NVIDIA. And that is exactly what Enron did. The difference is NVIDIA is doing it right in front of your face, and you're just denying that it's happening. That's the reality of that. That story is freaking hilarious. And guys, when this bubble bursts, and when unsuspecting working people see their nest eggs go up in smoke, I hope we all remember these sell-side quacks who circled the wagons around the biggest financial fraud in history. Because they're all denying it's happening right now. They are all circling the wagons around NVIDIA. When the losses start, remind them that they protected it, that they ran interference for this company. Oh, and by the way, we predicted on this channel not too long ago that the government would somehow try to blow into this AI bubble and that it wouldn't work. Well, yesterday, President Trump signed an executive order establishing the Genesis mission. Oh, the Genesis mission. We've got biblical references now. Let me save you time. He ordered the Department of Energy to blow into the bubble with everything they have because Congress won't give him the money to do it. There's a whole bunch of bullet points and all this stuff about the AI race and space and nuclear fission and nuclear fusion. Why not? All this crap. He's trying to get the government to blow into the bubble. It's not going to work. DOE can try to reallocate existing resources to the benefit of AI companies, but without hundreds of billions of money directly buying these chips, they're not going to be able to keep this bubble inflated. And Congress is not going to give them the money to do it, certainly not with an election year coming up. We also got a whole bunch of retail earnings this morning. Some interesting stories here. Dick's Sporting Goods, that stock is down. They just bought Foot Locker. Why? I have no idea why Dick's would buy Foot Locker. Foot Locker is a mall stock and malls are dying, but they bought it. And what's the first thing they did? They wrote down the value of the assets, and now they're closing stores and they're liquidating inventory. So exactly what you think would happen when you buy Foot Locker is happening. Dick's stock is down on that news. We've got Best Buy is stock is up this morning. Well, now the stock isn't up, but they reported better than expected earnings. Now, interesting with Best Buy, they're talking a lot about people are splurging on devices. If you think about where we were 5 years ago, Stimmy cash was flowing. Everybody was locked inside. People were shopping, buying everything under the sun, including new phones, new computers, laptops, everything. All that COVID stimulus purchased equipment is now 5 years old, obsolete, and needs to be replaced. So Best Buy is benefiting from an upgrade cycle. And when you consider that, the numbers were actually pretty dreadful compared to what they should be if we're all replacing those COVID-era devices. Now, Kohl's stock is absolutely ripping this morning. That's amazing. Why is Kohl's stock ripping? Because the market was expecting absolutely awful earnings, and the market got slightly better than absolutely awful earnings. Still pretty bad, down big year over year, comps negative, but not as bad as the dreadful results the market was expecting. That stock is up almost 30% ahead of the opening bell. Kohl's ripping on earnings. It's now positive for the year. Go figure. Also, peace could break out at any moment. At least that's according to the headlines. We've got headlines this morning that Ukraine has accepted a peace deal. All right, it's a step in the right direction. We're getting there. We're talking. We've got different versions of different deals floating around here. The deal isn't done until the shooting stops, and the shooting hasn't stopped yet. They were exchanging missile fire last night. We had the U.S. met with the Russians, and they came out with this 28-point or however many points. It was a lot of points plan, a lot of things in this deal that obviously one side is not going to like. And then the Europeans and the Ukrainians got together, and they said, get rid of this, get rid of this, get rid of this, add this, add this. Here's our idea. The Ukrainians accepted that one. So we've got two different versions, two different plans right now. One side has accepted each of their own side's version. Until you get both sides to agree to a plan, the same plan, there's no peace. But they're talking. We're closer to ending the war than we were yesterday. Let's take that for the win that it is, even if it is a small step in the right direction. We've also got some news out of the Red Sea that is encouraging this morning. Once again, peace could break out at any moment. We've got ADP's weekly employment change came out today. This is a new data point. ADP started doing this when the non-farm payrolls went away because government shut down. They're reporting a loss of 13,500 jobs last week off of recent headlines of layoffs at Amazon, Target. More recently, we had Verizon announcing layoffs. So the job market continues to weaken. Now, look, we also got some government data this morning. We got the producer price index for the month of September. This is several month old data. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on PPI. It was largely in line with expectations, and this is aged data. You got to put a big asterisk next to this September-October data, guys. The government shutdown was a mess. All the changes in personnel at the statistics divisions. I'm not going to waste your time talking about more about PPI this morning because I don't really trust this data. It was garbage before the shutdown. It's garbager now, so we're just going to move right past that one. And we've got more extend and pretend in Chinese real estate. Gaw Capital, that's not a name I'm familiar with, but they are pushing out a default on one of their debts. Why? Because the lenders have pretty much no choice. You can accept the offer that's on the table to not get paid for an extra few years, or you can enter default and you can take the losses and admit that you're never going to get anything back. And much like here in the States, extend and pretend is the law of the land. We got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit that subscribe button right next to it so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every day with the exception of course, Thanksgiving and Friday this week. We're not going to have a show on Thursday or Friday because of the holidays. I'll be spending some time with family, and we are moving out our weekly Zoom call that we do with our Patreon and magnanimous melon head members. We're going to be doing that on Sunday night this week as well. Holidays throw a monkey wrench into the schedule like that. Thank you guys for being flexible. Right now, the S&P 500 is modestly negative for the day, down 5 points, 0.08%, essentially unchanged here. We've got the Dow is just barely in the green this morning, up 37 points or 0.08% to the upside ahead of the open. And then NASDAQ is off by 70 points, a quarter of 1%. NASDAQ had one hell of a day yesterday. There was some enthusiasm, some dip buyers finally showed up after the sell-off last week following NVIDIA earnings. It looks like that has run its course now because they are blowing. The government is even trying to blow into the AI bubble, and it just ain't working this morning. The dollar is a little bit weaker here, down 29 basis points, 99.91, back below 100. Looks like the dollar started to weaken right around 7 a.m. I'm not aware of any data points that came out at 7 a.m. that might explain that. But the weaker dollar would put some upward pressure on asset prices this morning. Looking over at the bond market, it's quiet once again. The 30-year yield is lower by almost 3 basis points, 4.649 for the 30-year. The 10-year is off by 2 points and change at 4.012. We've got the 2-year is off by nearly 1 point, 3.481, and the 1 month is unchanged at 3.956. Looking over at the commodities board, we got some red and some green here. Spot gold is up $7, $4,142. That's higher by 0.18%. The February gold futures are at 41.76, also higher by $6 or $7 or 0.13%. Gold's looking good this morning here, just kind of treading water. Spot silver had a great day yesterday, hanging on to those gains today. 51.45 for spot silver in London. That's higher by another dime or 0.2%. Meanwhile, December silver futures, that's the New York price here on the COMEX exchange, 51.13. That's actually lower by a penny or 0.04, but I like the shiny. Copper is higher by 1.33%. Platinum is higher by about 0.33%. Palladium is down by about 0.33%. And oil is a little bit lower here this morning, $57.60 for WTI crude oil futures. That's off by $1.30 or about 2.2%. I suspect the prospects for peace in Ukraine and maybe some people expressing a little optimism about Russian crude coming back on the market might be sending these oil prices a little lower. Or maybe it's just worries about a global recession taking oil lower. Either way, crude is getting cheaper here, and that's probably going to continue for a while. We have got Bitcoin is a little bit lower than it was yesterday. We're looking at hourly candles right now, and I set that to hourly candles for a reason. We're sitting here at $86,900 as priced on Coinbase. We had a pretty good weekend in Bitcoin. We bottomed out on Friday and then rose all weekend, but I suspect this is just a bear flag that the market has put in. I think this sell-off is going to continue after this consolidation period and then resume lower should it break out of that range, which it looks like it's about to break out of that range right about now. So I expect the selling to resume in Bitcoin and probably drag tech stocks down with it when that happens. Now let's talk about those tech stocks this morning because they're moving. Alphabet's AI chips, Gemini model, position it to rival NVIDIA. NVIDIA is looking at shrinking market share in a shrinking market potentially if this bubble actually bursts. Alphabet shares are poised to shake up the rankings of the world's most valuable companies. Amid signs, the search giant is making headway in efforts to rival NVIDIA's best-selling AI accelerator. Man, Warren Buffett had one hell of a final trade on his way out the door, didn't he? Look at that. That's prompting investors to reassess the technology landscape and the potential changes in stock market leadership as rave reviews for Alphabet's new Gemini artificial intelligence model and demand for AI chips pushes its shares higher. Alphabet is up 35% since mid-October, adding nearly $1 trillion in value over that time. Gains this year have left the Google parent about $590 billion away from NVIDIA's $4.4 trillion market cap as of Monday's close. We've got NVIDIA coming lower, Google rising faster to meet them. Will we get that crossover? It'll be interesting to see. Now, this is the news that I think is really spooking the NVIDIA bros here. Meta Platforms is in discussions to use Google chips, known as Tensor Processing Units or TPUs, in data centers in 2027, the information reported, citing an unidentified person familiar with the talks. There's that asterisk, anonymous sources, so you got to take this with a grain of salt, but the market is reacting to this. Meta also may rent chips from Google's cloud division next year, the news outlet said. Either way, that's not good for NVIDIA. NVIDIA is expected to have phenomenal growth, but now it will be very natural to see a market that is much more wary of competition, said Alexandra Morris, an investment director at Skagen AS. The narrative that NVIDIA is the only one that will provide chips to this buildup of data centers, that narrative has changed. And once again, guys, just a reminder, I am short NVIDIA, and that short's doing all right this morning. NVIDIA stock is down 4.2%, $174.88, just off the lows of the morning, but not by much. Let's refresh this and make that chart look a little better, shall we? There we go. NVIDIA just barely off the lows of the morning. Not looking good here. Now, contrast that with Alphabet that is ripping here, up another 3.1% after rising 6.25% yesterday, $328.55 for Alphabet. Year to date, this stock is now up 67.25%, a good chunk of that coming in just the last few weeks since they reported earnings. Meanwhile, this one, oh, I just love this headline. NVIDIA says it's not Enron in private memo refuting accounting questions. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. When a company has to come out and say, we're not Enron, that's not a good thing, even though the people in the financial press are trying to tout it as such. Now, this article spent a lot of time, or this memo spent a lot of time, deliberately targeting Michael Burry and his claims of depreciation, something that I agree wholeheartedly with. But Michael Burry does not need my help in defending his thesis, so we're going to move right past that. A series of prominent stock sales and allegations of accounting irregularities have put NVIDIA in the middle of a debate about the value of artificial intelligence and its related stocks. Now NVIDIA is pushing back. In a private 7-page memo sent by NVIDIA investor relations team to Wall Street analysts over the weekend, the chipmaker directly addressed a dozen claims made by skeptical investors. And I want to send a shout out to Greg Krennan at the Coastal Journal. I believe it was his article on Substack that may have prompted this, of course, along with Dr. Burry's, his new Substack and some of his criticisms of NVIDIA. But we're going to skip right past the commentary on Michael Burry because we're all familiar with the depreciation argument. But this is what really cracked me up. NVIDIA also responds to claims that the current situation is analogous to historical accounting frauds, Enron, WorldCom, and Lucent, that feature vendor financing and SPVs or special purpose vehicles, which is exactly what NVIDIA is doing. NVIDIA does not resemble historical accounting frauds because NVIDIA's underlying business is economically sound. Our reporting is complete and transparent, and we care about our reputation for integrity, the memo said. Let me just stop you right there, that whole bit about your reputation for integrity. Might I remind you that NVIDIA has a well-documented history of accounting fraud and settlement with the SEC, starting all the way back in 2003, when they were caught artificially inflating their earnings. Their CFO had to resign in disgrace and pay a whole big disgorgement because they were hiding agreements with vendors to undercharge in one quarter in order to inflate their earnings and then overcharge in subsequent quarters. And when NVIDIA stock fell by more than 50% because of that, the investors were pissed. They got wiped out. And of course, they sued. That happened. Jensen Huang was CEO. And do we all believe that Jensen Huang, we're all like, oh, please sign my boobies. And Jensen's the smartest man. And he puts on his stupid headset and gives a TED talk every other day while he's holding up a GPU. And he makes all these promises. Yeah, that's the same guy who was the CEO when they were doing that accounting fraud. So this man that you hail as a genius now, was he an idiot back in 2003 when he didn't know that his CFO was inflating earnings? Or was he complicit in it and he just let it happen? One of these two things has to be true. NVIDIA's what are they saying? Their reputation for integrity. They have no reputation. Reputation is supposed to matter. And then NVIDIA says, unlike Enron, NVIDIA does not use special purpose entities to hide debt and inflate revenue. That is correct. NVIDIA does not use special purpose entities to hide debt and inflate revenue. NVIDIA uses special purpose entities to inflate revenue in plain view of people who are too stupid to realize they're doing it. That's what NVIDIA does. CoreWeave is nothing more than a special purpose vehicle that exists for the sole purpose of inflating NVIDIA's revenue. That was my original thesis all the way back in 2023. You all said I was crazy and don't listen to randos. Now it's so obvious and it's become so blatantly obvious that NVIDIA has to put out memos that says we're not Enron in order to cover that up. Remember, guys, never forget the people who circled the wagons around this company and ran interference for them. Right, Stacey Raskin? Meanwhile, we've got President Trump is ordering the Department of Energy to blow, baby, blow into the AI bubble because he just wants his stock bubble to stay inflated, at least past the midterms. President Donald Trump unveils the Genesis mission to accelerate AI for scientific discovery. Look, I'm going to save you the time here. He's not ordering the government to buy chips. He's ordering the government to make scientific data sets available to accelerate AI research and use the resources at your disposal and all this other stuff. Oh, yeah, we have to win the AI arms race with China, even though I don't even think China's playing in the AI arms race. We keep acting like there's this arms race. China is building like 4% of the data centers the United States is building. They're not even trying. I told you the government was going to try to keep this bubble inflated. This isn't going to work. The Department of Energy doesn't have enough resources to do this, but they'll sure try. And you got to love this tweet from White House AI and crypto czar David Sacks. According to today's Wall Street Journal, AI-related investment accounts for half of GDP growth. A reversal would risk recession. Yep, been saying that for 2 years too. We can't afford to go backwards. Hey, David Sacks, who is this we were talking about when you say we can't afford to go backwards? I didn't spend any money on GPUs. I'm fine. I don't care. Oh, that's right. You and your buddies on the podcast and all the startups that you piled money into because you decided to jump on the hype wagon and put your own personal wealth. You can't afford to go backwards. We? There's no we here, Mr. Crypto and AIs are. Again, the wrong people are whispering into President Trump's ear right now. I hope he realizes it in time because AI is going to be a massive liability in the midterms next year. And you can already see it with Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez speaking in Congress about that MIT study showing 95% of companies are getting no return on AI. Meanwhile, we've got a whole bunch of retail earnings that were pretty interesting this morning. Let's start with Dick's Sporting Goods to shutter some Foot Locker stores to protect profits. Why did you buy this company? Just to shut down the stores? I don't know, but that's what they did. Dick's Sporting Goods is planning to close a slew of Foot Locker stores. Now that its acquisition of the sneaker company is complete, the company said Tuesday when announcing fiscal third quarter earnings. It's unclear how many stores Dick's plans to shutter, but the closures are part of a larger restructuring it's implementing, so Foot Locker isn't a drag on its profits come fiscal 2026, Dick's CEO Ed Stack told CNBC. You know, one way to make sure Foot Locker is not a drag on your earnings is to not buy Foot Locker in the first place, but I digress. We need to clean out the garage that we just bought. We've taken pretty aggressive markdowns to clean out old merchandise. We're impairing some store assets. We'll close some stores. Everything we're doing is to protect 2026 and just kind of do this one time. As a result, Foot Locker's comparable sales are expected to be down in the mid to high single digits in the current quarter, with margins expected to fall between 10 and 15 points. By the way, closing stores doesn't affect comparable store sales because comparable stores are comparable stores. So closing a store elsewhere doesn't affect this comparable store, but I digress. Beyond the Foot Locker business, Dick's saw comps rise 5.7% during the quarter. That's actually pretty good, well ahead of the 3.6% analysts had expected. For its namesake banner, the company is now expecting comps to be between 3.5% to 4% up from the prior range of 2% to 3.5%. That's ahead of expectations for 3.6% growth. So outside of the big hit they're taking on the Foot Locker acquisition, Dick's posted a decent quarter. Doesn't matter. The stock is down 3.88% ahead of the opening bell. Now, it's doing better than initially. I guess they said something on the conference call to reassure investors because at one point they were down over 8% this morning. But again, it kind of makes you wonder, what the hell were you thinking when you bought a dying Foot Locker? Maybe there's some other asset that we can't see that they got as part of that deal, and it'll all make sense in a couple of quarters. But for now, it's a head scratcher. Meanwhile, Best Buy hikes sales forecast as shoppers upgrade tech and splurge on devices. That's a little bit of a misleading headline, but Best Buy did post better than expected results. They hiked their full-year forecast Tuesday as it topped Wall Street's quarterly sales expectations, and customers turned to the retailer to upgrade tech devices and splurge on new computers, gaming consoles, and smartphones. The consumer electronics retailer said it now expects revenue of between $41.65 and $41.95 billion for the full year. That's higher than the previous range of $41.1 to $41.9 billion. They expect adjusted EPS of $6.25 to $6.35 compared to the prior range of $6.15 to $6.30. So they're raising their guidance here. Best Buy said it expects full-year comps, a metric that tracks online and stores open at least 14 months, to range between a 0.5% rise to a 1.2% increase compared with its previous expectations for a 1% decline to a 1% climb. So the comps are looking a little bit better here. They got rid of that negative at the lower end of the range. In the company's news release, CEO Corey Barry said Best Buy saw better than expected sales for the quarter because of strong results across computing, gaming, and mobile phones. She said sales grew across both its website and stores. Again, guys, five-year-old COVID devices, now they're obsolete and they're starting to be upgraded. And even all that, it's resulting in comps growing of about 0.5% to 1.1%. Not great, but better than it could have been. Best Buy stock is up a fraction. It looks like the opening bell has now rung. Best Buy is up 1.1%, $76.50. They were down ahead of the opening bell, so all things considered, it could be worse. Now, check out Kohl's. This is wild this morning. Kohl's shares soar as Q3 results beat expectations. Kohl's stock soared 23% before the bell on Tuesday after the retail reported better than expected third quarter results. Both earnings and revenue surpassed Wall Street estimates, and the retailer also increased its full-year outlook. Revenue came in at $3.41 billion, exceeding $3.33 billion expected. That's despite declining 2.9% year-over-year. Aha, see, a 2.9% decline. We beat expectations even though our sales fell. It just means they fell less than they were expecting. Comparable sales decreased 1.7%. That's dreadful. But that was better than the 3.89% apocalypse that had been anticipated. Again, just better than awful is enough to rocket this stock. The company's gross margins improved to 39.6%, up 51 basis points from 39.1. That's actually really good. Kohl's also reported merchandise inventory stood at $3.9 billion, down $5 billion year over year. So they are getting leaner. They're writing down or either writing down or selling down that inventory. But pretty bad results. It's just the market was expecting a whole hell of a lot worse. Look at this stock rip this morning. Let's refresh this. Up 24%, $19.58. And hey, year to date, Kohl's is now up 39.25% year to date. Who had that one on their 2025 bingo that Kohl's would be one of the better performing stocks? Well, there it is. All right, let's talk about some geopolitical developments this morning. Ukraine agrees to a peace proposal with only minor details to settle, official says, but no word from Russia. Here's the thing with peace agreements, guys. The enemy gets a vote, all right? Okay, there's only minor details to settle. You may think those are minor. Did the Russians think they're minor? Let's hope so. It's encouraging. U.S. officials told CBS News on Tuesday that the Ukraine government had agreed to a peace deal brokered by the Trump administration – to stop Russia's nearly four-year assault. The American official and Ukraine's national security advisor, Rustem Umerov, said a common understanding on a proposal had been reached, with details still to be worked out. Let's talk a little bit about some of those details. I think they were down here. Last week, CNBC obtained a draft of one of Trump administration's backed proposals to end the war. The proposal included several provisions that Zelensky has rejected in the past, such as a requirement that Ukraine give up its entire Donetsk region, including parts that aren't currently occupied by Russia, and an end to the country's push to join NATO. I'm sure some of the people with the Ukrainian flag in their Twitter profile are going to hate that. But let's keep reading. There's also an accompanying document related to security guarantees, according to U.S. and Ukrainian officials. Olga Stefanishnya, Ukraine's ambassador to the U.S., told Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan on Sunday that the document specifies that the U.S. intends to offer security assurances that she said are along the lines of Article 5 of the NATO treaty, which commits members to come to the defense of a NATO state if attacked. I'm sure there are plenty of isolationist people who are going to hate that idea. On Saturday, a group of NATO members and other U.S. allies released a joint statement calling the proposed peace plan a basis which will require additional work. Now, the important thing here, guys, is there's some things in here that both sides are going to hate. And that is how negotiations work, all right? When neither side can declare victory, both sides are going to have to give something up in order to end the war. The alternative is to keep killing, all right? And if you're like, this is unacceptable, Ukraine shouldn't give up territory, well, I hear they're currently taking enlistments, all right? If you're like, oh, we shouldn't accept this plan, who's the we here? You're not in a trench with freaking drones falling on your head. So look, this is a step in the right direction, but there's always a but, isn't there? According to First Squawk, U.S. and Ukraine finalizing peace deal, but Russia likely to reject the changes, according to the Washington Post. It's a step in the right direction, but this isn't done yet. All right. So, you know, hey, let's be hopeful. All right. It's a good sign, but the war's not over. They're still shooting at each other. People are still dying as we speak. And another way to tell, guys, look at the defense stocks right now. This is General Dynamics, which, by the way, is a name that I own personally. General Dynamics stock is up 0.5% right now. If peace had just broken out in the Ukraine, General Dynamics stock would not be green this morning. Raytheon, all right, they make the Tomahawks. Raytheon is only down 0.25%. If this war was over, Raytheon would be down 3 or 4%. Lockheed Martin, let's look at that one. Lockheed Martin stock up 0.1%. The war's not over, guys. The defense names are telling us this war's not over. It's a step in the right direction, but we got a ways to go. Also, along the lines of things getting a little bit better, or at least slightly less than catastrophic, we've got this one from Walter Bloomberg. Suez Canal Authority says Maersk container ships to resume transit via Suez Canal partially at the beginning of December. What that means is Maersk is now willing to sail in the Red Sea past the Houthis without fear of missiles hitting their boats. Again, this is a step in the right direction. It's not all clear, but it's better than we were yesterday. Maybe ships transiting the Red Sea are going to get a little cheaper. Maybe people get a little bit of relief from inflation caused by higher transit costs. Hey, I'm just looking for something to be optimistic about this morning, guys. There are some optimistic things happening here. All right, now back to our regularly scheduled doom and pessimism. United States ADP employment changed weekly. This is a new data point. ADP started putting this out weekly as soon as the government shutdown started, because we were, you know, there was a shortage of available data. So ADP is like, hey, let's try to capture a little bit of market share. So this weekly employment change, it's a four-week average of the weekly change in the number of people working. It's a mouthful, but, you know, it's the change from 1 week, but they smooth it out over the last four. U.S. private employers shed an average of 13,500 jobs per week in the 4 weeks ending November 8th, 2025. That is a sharp increase from the 2,500 weekly decline recorded during the previous period, according to ADP research. The data indicates that job losses accelerated in late October and early November following announcements of significant workforce reductions by major companies, including Amazon and Target. Okay, so this is a new data point, which is why we only have a few bars here. We didn't have one in the middle of October there, but you can see here the average of the last 4 weeks is 13,500 jobs per week lost based on these big announcements from Target, Amazon, Verizon, and the like. So we still don't have reliable non-farm payrolls data. We're probably not going to get it for a while here. So this is kind of the best jobs data we have in the meantime, and it doesn't look good. And I would say this also makes it more likely that the Fed cuts rates in December. By the way, let's look at the Fed likelihood of a rate cut while we're here, shall we? Currently, the market is pricing in now an 85% likelihood that the Fed cuts in December, up from about 30% in the middle of last week. The last couple of days, the likelihood of this Fed rate cut in December has increased dramatically. It looks like it's all but assured now, guys, because there's almost nothing that happens between now and December that might prevent a rate cut, right? We're not going to get any more inflation data. Again, we got PPI this morning. It was in line with expectations with a big fat asterisk next to it because the government was a mess when it collected that data. That's why we're not even reporting it. This is going to happen. The Fed is going to cut in December. It's probably not going to be enough because, look, I mean, the market rallied a little bit to close last week and to start this week, emphasis very little. But the doubling of the likelihood of a Fed rate cut, the near tripling of the likelihood, and the market has barely moved in that time. Got to wonder, is 25 basis points going to be enough to stop the AI bubble from bursting? Probably not. Last one of the day, private equity firm Goss secures last-minute loan extension. We've got more extend and pretend in China. Hey, remember the collapse of the Chinese real estate market? That's still a thing. Private equity firm Goss Capital Partners secured an extension to a property-backed loan that was due Monday, people familiar with the matter said, after last-minute talks highlighting the enduring impact of China's property crisis. Lenders agreed to give Hong Kong-based Goss an extra 18 months to repay the loan, which is backed by a life science park in Shanghai, said the people asking not to be identified, discussing private matters. Another 18-month extension will automatically kick in at the end of that time. What? All right, so you get another 18 months, and then there's automatically another 18 months after that. Why is that not an automatic 36-month extension? I don't know. I guess it just sounds better when we break it in half and report it one at a time. So an 18-month extension followed by another one 18 months from now. That's fun, if certain conditions are met, naturally. Because of the pending regulatory approval, the extension will initially take the form of a one-year reprieve. All right, so it's a 36-month extension that we're calling a one-year reprieve. That sounds much better now. The focus group is really positive about this thing. The loan amount was also slightly reduced under the terms to $108 million from $110 million, the people said. Why is the amount they owe going down by $2 million? Probably because the lenders know they're not even going to get $108 million, so why bother holding out? We all know we're not going to get paid back. It's all about just delaying that comeuppance as long as possible. Goss' 11th-hour push to reach a deal underscores the difficulty some borrowers are facing as they seek to refinance loans tied to China's slumping real estate sector. Lenders are increasingly wary about extending their exposure to property in the country as default risks grow. Some banks on the Goss loan had earlier pushed for a shorter extension. Well, they didn't get it. And look, what are their choices here, guys? They still haven't liquidated Evergrande. Evergrande has been bankrupt and in default for what, 3.5 years now? And they still haven't sold off the company's assets. The lenders for Evergrande are still sitting there waiting for the courts to get around to selling it off. And then they find out how much money they're not going to get paid back from all the debt that they lent to that company. It's just extend and pretend. You know, if we never actually sell the assets, then we never actually realize the loss. And we can just continue this forever, right? Isn't that how that works? Oh, it's not? Well, somebody forgot to tell the Chinese because it seems like that's their approach to this. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Travis from Real Estate Mindset, you bunkers, SOBU. Are we doing this thing again? He says, first super chat, happy Tuesday. Yes, thank you for the competition to be last in the super chat. Travis and several others were dying to get in the last word yesterday. That was kind of hilarious. Thanks, brother, for everything you do for the channel. I appreciate it. Hey, Troy Rhodes 2653 says, may not have won yesterday's race to the last, but no one can beat me in first super chat. Should we tell him? Sorry, Troy. I don't know how to break it to you, but oh, Travis got to you first, Troy. But hey, congratulations. You are first to be second today. So there's that. Nobody can take that away from you, Troy. Either way, I appreciate the support of the channel, sir. You're awesome. And there he goes again. Oops. Oops. Yep. Sorry, guys. Not going to do that one again this morning, but I appreciate that very much. Hey, guys, just a reminder that we're not going to do the show Thursday or Friday this week because of the holiday, and we're moving out the Zoom Thank you guys very much for the super chats. Thank you also to my magnanimous melon heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for everything you guys do for the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Armando, you were just waiting to do this, weren't you? He was pointing that I'm last. Yep, thank you very much, sir, for the generosity. I appreciate that very much. Hey, guys, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button that's right next to it for the YouTube algorithm should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.